This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
A number of guests for you today, as usual. We have topics to get into. Knock on wood, as of this very second, all 15 ACC football teams are scheduled to play. It has been a rough and rocky road in the world of college football this week, but right now the ACC has everybody with a green light special. And again, it's only 7:01 a.m. on a Thursday. Wes, what's happening?
Let me double check, and you're my resource for national college football late in the afternoon and early evening. Now, we know that the Vanderbilt-Missouri game was tabled early in the week, right? Was that Sunday that happened?
Correct. We're not having that this week.
Okay.
Not happening.
Then yesterday afternoon, about 2:30 or 2 o'clock, we heard that Florida and LSU was tabled.
That is correct. Right.
Okay. And then last night, of course, it was announced that not only does head football coach Nick Saban, but director of athletics Greg Byrne have both tested positive for the coronavirus, correct?
That is right.
And we now have no status update as of yet on Georgia and Alabama, which is supposed to be Saturday night.
I hope they play. I mean, I say this all the time. As many games as we can get, the better. I don't care if we're talking about Pac-12,
absolutely,
Big Ten, or anybody in between. When they get cranked up here beginning next week, at least the Big Ten, the more the merrier. But you just knew we're going to have starts and stops. The ACC has suffered from it. Big 12, again this week with Baylor and Oklahoma State. That game was going to be scheduled. It's been postponed, and now the SEC is going through their issues. Again, nobody is immune to this, and that's why if you're a Big Ten or Pac-12 fan, you're sitting there watching all this going, oh, yeah, can we just get to the beginning and then take our chances, and that's what you hope for. So, but from our perspective, since we cover the Atlantic Coast Conference, Wes, the only weekend scheduled where all 15 teams are going to go after it, still a go as of this second. All 15 are scheduled to play this weekend in the ACC.
I guess where I was going was I knew about the two SEC games and then the announcement late yesterday, but right now the other leagues, everybody's okay, right? And the Big 12 has kind of been the one. The Big 12 tabled some games. How many games they have this week? One?
One game.
You say?
It's one game. Kansas, I guess that counts. They're playing. Kansas and West Virginia is the only game in the Big 12 this weekend. I mean, if that's
everything
not,
else is either an open date or
postponed.
Pushed, right?
Yep.
Wow.
And if that isn't a snapshot of 2020, Wes, if that's not a snapshot of 2020, that here we are in the middle of October, best month of the year. If you're a college football junkie, Major League Baseball, whatever it is you love, it is hard to beat this month. But here we are in the middle of October, and the ACC with 15 teams, everybody playing. The Big 12 with 10 teams has one game. The SEC, where football rules.
Yeah.
You got two conference games already on the back shelf. And now their head football coach, Nick Saban, incredible. Again, we wish him the very best. Speedy recovery, he and Greg Byrne and anybody else affected.
Absolutely.
I mean, Florida yesterday, Scott Strickland announced that they have less than 50 scholarship players for football, so there's no way Florida could play LSU. I mean, that is the world that we're in. So I keep saying it. I know you say the same thing, whether it be radio, TV, your best friends, talking to neighbors down the street, whatever the case may be. Whatever games you get, hug them, embrace them, and enjoy them because there are just no guarantees. I mean, we just got to do the best we can. And we've said that probably 50 times on this show, but it's just exactly what it is.
Yeah, I yesterday was out running some errands yesterday afternoon, and I had a guy in a store actually come up and start talking to me about college football. And he said, hey, did you hear what just happened with Florida and LSU? And I said, no, they postponed it. And he said, oh, yeah, they did, to December the 12th. I said, well, let me tell you what, you just be grateful for what you get. I said, you know, it's hard to get this stuff on the line, period. And once you lose it off the line, you hope you can get it back. So I think people are realizing exactly what you talked about a long time ago, Mark, is that, you know, we got to hope that we can just get to the end. We hope we could get started, and now that we're going, we're hopeful we can get to the end, and certainly everybody stay safe, stay healthy, understand that, you know, these protocols in place and all the things there are for the health and safety of everybody involved, not just the players and the folks in the games. And we know there have been plenty of ACC games played this year where teams have not been anywhere near the full inventory of what they'd hoped. But, you know, hey, look, we got the ball on the tee, and we're trying to do our best to get you live football and enjoy some normalcy, right, amidst the turn in this. So our best wishes, as you said, to Coach Saban and certainly Greg Byrne and everybody impacted at the University of Alabama. It should be an interesting weekend, though. We'll see how this goes with the 15 ACC teams. Syracuse plays the only non-conference game. They get Liberty. And, by the way, Matt Gutierrez, who covers the Orange for The Athletic, is going to join us here in just a few minutes. We'll kind of get caught up on interesting the Andre Sisco opt-out, the Tommy DeVito injury, kind of the midway point, if you will, of this regular season. And you just don't feel like Syracuse has ever gotten really comfortable, do you, Mark, with with the season? It seems to have been kind of balky from the bump for Dino Babers and his team. So we'll talk to Matt Gutierrez coming up. Marty Smith will be here, as will Eric Wood in our visit. We've got a big announcement at 9 a.m. this morning, Pac. Late-breaking 9 a.m. announcement. Not 10:05, 9 a.m. stuff in the Power Hour with Packer and Durham this morning. So special announcement coming up here on the program. Let's get to a couple of news items. One we spoke of, Matt Mercial of the Orlando Sentinel tweeted this out yesterday, that Tamarian Terry is expected to undergo a procedure on his knee this week and could miss a couple of weeks due to the procedure for Florida State. That would take out their leader in not only receptions but receiving yards, and a guy who caught a big touchdown pass here last Saturday night at Notre Dame too.
Well, that is not great news. Again, we wish him the very best. He is a big-time talent. If there is good news out of Tallahassee, it would be that Jordan Travis got banged up a little bit against Notre Dame and sounds like he's going to be good to go for their matchup against number 5 North Carolina on Saturday night. So losing Terry is a big blow. I think this is an important weekend for Florida State. Just where we are, 1-3, you know, it just seems like, okay, what direction can this team go? Can they pull off an upset and kind of find it a little bit? And again, I think Jordan gave them a little bit of a spark on the offensive side Saturday night in South Bend. But, you know, if they go down and North Carolina rolls in there with that high-powered offense and Mack Brown beats his alma mater for the very first time, Florida State at 1-4, you kind of wonder, all right, where are they going? So I think there's a couple right. teams at the crossroads this week. I think Syracuse is one of them as well, Wes. And Louisville, I know the schedule gets easier after this week, but I don't think anybody at Louisville expect to be 1-3 and staring 1-4 down the barrel having to go to Notre Dame this weekend. So I think there's a couple teams. Pitt is another one that I've been high on Pitt from the get-go. The back-to-back one-point losses. Kenny Pickett's kind of banged up a little bit. Go to Miami. They're obviously going to be ticked off after what happened in Death Valley. It's kind of an interesting and important weekend for Pitt, too. Are they going to go LLL in the middle before they start going on these crazy road trips? So there's a number of teams, I think, at the crossroads coming up this weekend.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that part. I sense that the Pitt-Miami game, the stakes on it are interesting for Pittsburgh after the 2 1-point losses. I would also say, too, the stakes on it from Miami are fairly interesting. You lose to Clemson, you know, you then lose another one, and then all of a sudden you just put yourself right there in the mix with some other teams. It's interesting after playing Clemson now, it's a little bit like the Florida State thing in the 90s. George O'Leary used to give us a great line after Georgia Tech would play Florida State, and he would say, you know, the thing is, Florida State beats you up so bad when they play you that you got guys that are hurt the next week for whatever game you might be playing. Well, does Clemson mentally do it to you now, Pac?
Yes.
I mean, because you've talked about this, and Joe Giglio mentioned it yesterday after the game. I mean, you expend so much mental and physical energy in a game against Clemson. Do they get you the next week? Well, Miami's the first to – we'll see where this goes. Remember Virginia?
Well, I was going to ask.
Virginia lost on that Saturday night and then turned around and lost to NC State.
You did the Hoos last week. They didn't look like the same team that played at Clemson. I thought they got sky high for the Tigers and played well. I'm not taking anything away from NC State's win, man. Hey, you win the game. It's all about scoreboard. You move on. But I mentioned yesterday, the hangover effect when you play Clemson now is a real thing because you know, hey, we're going to play number one. That is the standard. And if we aren't buttoned up, ready to go, they will embarrass you. And sometimes even when you are buttoned up, they will embarrass right. you. But it's the following week where all of a sudden, you know what, hey, all right, so they beat us by four touchdowns. Man, I can't believe it. There's, you start worrying about it. Oh, holy mackerel, we kind of lost our confidence against those guys. So, you know, you got to deal with it, man. And so let's just see what happens this week with Miami. I think this is why I said to you early in the week, I am fascinated to watch the Canes Saturday against Pitt. How do they bounce back? Because you're going to find out about Manny Diaz, the leadership in that locker room. And again, everything I've read this week has been very positive. Practices have been good. Kids couldn't wait to get in to watch tape to be coached up. I think that's a great sign. But now you got to go do it against a Pitt team that haps. Hey, you talking about desperate, Wes, after what's happened to Pitt the last 2 weeks. They are going to make that long trip down to Coral Gables, and this is a must win for Pitt. So something's got to give. There's, like I said, there's a number of teams this weekend kind of at the crossroads, and I know you got Virginia again this week against Wake. In some respects, I think for Virginia, after L, hey, you put three straight L's on the board, good night. You could kiss Charlotte goodbye. So a huge weekend for the Hoos, too.
I agree with that. A couple of other news items. Basketball practices officially underway. Syracuse got started yesterday. Louisville starts their practices today. I even think some of the other schools did the small group session that's kind of been going on prior to the official start of basketball practice. Speaking of basketball, the NCAA Division I yesterday, that council ratified the swing on the house for Winter Sports Pack. We have now gone a calendar year of free eligibility. We've gone from March of 20 through, or April of 20 through March of 21. We've now completed the athletic, academic, whatever cycle you want to call it, of the NCAA now granting extra years of eligibility, spring, fall, and now winter for student athletes. And again, those of you that have watched this show know how I feel about this, and not at any point in the process did the NCAA extend to its membership any sort of financial remuneration to help with said cost of free year of eligibility.
Well, everybody will just go outside the athletic department on that big old money tree that just has all those C notes hanging from it, and they'll just rip those down, Wes, and pay for it. I mean, we all got hundreds of pounds and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in the backyard, right? It's a free party. NCAA's allowing everybody just, hey, this is great. Everybody have a good party. Who's going to pay for it? They, I think, waved the white flag yesterday. Not only did they rule that, but they made it official that if you have a pulse and play football, hey, you too can go to a bowl game. Comical. And then on top of that, in the fine print yesterday, Wes, the city of Las Vegas, the city of Las Vegas, Sin City.
Yeah.
Sin City in the men's basketball tournament will host a regional. Yep. And for how many decades, let me emphasize the word decades, did the NCAA go, Las Vegas? Oh, there's no way where anything NCAA related could ever go to Las Vegas. They've got gambling and strippers and all kinds of things there. Heaven forbid. Please. So now all of a sudden Vegas is going to host an NCAA men's regional. I'm telling you, they've waved the white flag. I think those folks in Indianapolis just went, oh my God, we've run out of muffins and croissants and the coffee's cold, so just let everybody do whatever they want to do. I mean, it's what it's come down to. I don't know what they're doing in Indianapolis. I couldn't tell you.
Can I say this? If you're going to give everybody a free year of eligibility, which essentially you have just done, why in the world would you ever deny a transfer waiver of any student athlete in the last calendar year?
Agreed. I can't argue. I mean,
why would you deny this if you're giving a free year of eligibility?
Get the white flag out. They have waived it. Because, I mean, all that yesterday, if you're an athletic director, you saw that and went, oh, yeah. I mean, it's great for the student athlete. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But you have to. I wish I had a dollar every time I've said this on radio or TV. Nothing gets done until something gets sold. Now, how in the world are you going to pay for this? mean, it's great. I mean, we'd all love to have Lamborghinis and $1 trillion houses, but you got to pay for this stuff. I mean, I don't get it, but whatever. It's not my problem.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wes, we're going to shift gears to Syracuse, NY. Matt Gutierrez from The Athletic covers the Cuse, and he makes his debut on the program. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Appreciate you having me.
It's good having you on. There is so much to talk about almost across the board with Syracuse. But the first things first, it is football season, and it has been a rough start, and really nothing has gotten easier for Syracuse now as we've moved on. It really kind of feels like a pivotal weekend for Dino Babers. You got Liberty. I know they're undefeated. They're 4-0. But if you're going to turn this thing around, it really has to start this weekend.
No doubt. You're looking at a 1-3 Syracuse team right now at home versus Liberty, a game that, you know, originally when you schedule that, you think you're just going to win another non-conference game. Obviously, it's a COVID year now. They only have one non-conference game on the schedule. That is Liberty, the only non-ACC opponent, and a must, pretty much a must win for this program to keep any shot at 500 ball alive. Otherwise, you're looking at the fourth year in Dino Babers' five-year tenure at Syracuse where they're going to be under 500. Things are looking quite bleak right now with a program that's dealt with a number of injuries and opt-outs. And now heading into this weekend, you need to put up a W here.
Matt, let's go to we're going to talk about Andre Sisco and Tommy DeVito, obviously, because those are two of the more interesting notes that have presented themselves this week. Any sense as to the Andre Sisco decision? Is it simply based on the long-term nature of the injury that he suffered in the warm-ups against Georgia Tech? This is not, you know, back to the, I want to say, Jarvion Howard situation where those guys opted out. I guess that was early July. Was there any sense that Sisco was going to opt out prior to the injury, or was this something that you think is directly related to the injury?
I think it's directly related to the injury, no doubt. Yeah, freak incident for sure. Pre-game Georgia Tech and warm-ups. Just see the video. You know, Andre's walking off the field, limping, and he's, you know, we understand he's down in Florida. Where he'll begin training. It looks like he's going to enter the NFL draft in 2021. We've seen him everywhere from early first round to a bit later, but he's a ball hawking guy who I think will fit well in the way the NFL has gone. He's a junior. He's got good speed. I think he's developed a lot. First, you know, freshman All-American at Syracuse in forever. So he brings a lot to the table, but had not heard any indication really that he was going to opt out until this injury. There were a number of Syracuse players, not just the two running backs, who were on the fence of opting out back in July and August, thought the season might not even get played. COVID concerns, only about three Syracuse players did opt out initially. I didn't think Andre was one of them, but here they are now, Syracuse without their best player on defense.
Tommy DeVito gets nicked up. So what's the quarterback room going to look like moving forward with Liberty and for the rest of the year?
Sure. Tommy's the four-star recruit, the best quarterback recruit at Syracuse since Donovan McNabb. He was supposed to be the guy, the marquee recruit of Dino Babers' tenure. Now they're without him for the remainder of this season, so they're going to go with Rex Culpepper, at least to start things. He's been in the program for 5 years. Essentially, he's a pretty relatively close to dual threat as you're going to get on the Syracuse roster. He's been through testicular cancer, really mm-hmm. positive person in that locker room and has been for years behind Eric Dungy. He's thrown the first touchdown of the season for Syracuse at Pittsburgh. It was the second game, only their first touchdown. You see it there down the right sideline, but I think he's going to be a good, pretty good backup, but all things considered, Tommy DeVito out really hurts the Syracuse team. I think it throws things up in the air offensively.
All right, so Matt Gutierrez with us from The Athletic. Matt, when you look at Saturday, they're a home underdog to Liberty. I'm not looking for the win-or-loss statement here on the rest of the season, but this seems to be – I mean, the struggle is real now, right? I mean, this is where can the positive vibes come from now with this football team, given the news of this week that DeVito may be gone, as you said, for the length of the season, and certainly Cisco's opt-out. Where do they turn? You mentioned Culpepper's locker room leadership. Is there somebody else that can – that kind of help this team pick themselves up a little bit?
It's tough. Things are pretty dire with this program, a program that's, you know, looking at possibly 7 losing seasons in the last 8 years. Syracuse has struggled mightily, and, you know, people internally and even externally have thought Dino Babers may be the guy who can help turn this thing around, and had their first 10-win season in 2018. That was the first 10-win season since 2001. Otherwise, they're 1-3, and very possible they go 1-10, 2-9, or maybe at best 3-8 this season, the way things are looking, given the opt-outs and the injuries and the 3 losses they've put up so far, especially the one last weekend, not pretty. I think moving ahead, though, that the defense all said 3-3-5 formation, new system under Tony White from Arizona State has looked really solid so far. I think the point totals aren't totally indicative of the way they've played. To come in and implement that defense without essentially any spring practice and to do that with a lot of Zoom calls and just trying to get guys on the same page has been really impressive. He probably gets a B grade, even an A minus grade, I think, given the conditions. So I think if you're Syracuse, you try to hang your hat on the defense, generate turnovers, and just like any organization, pro or college, in this boat, you just try to get your younger guys and build toward the future, get them as many reps as possible.
Matt, if there wasn't a perfect snapshot of what's been going on at Syracuse for this 2020 year and football season, it's the fact that the multi-million-dollar roof was leaking Saturday against Duke. I mean, listen, I'm the worst handyman in America, but how's that possible? I mean, it looks great on television. I'm sure it's a total upgrade across the board. John Waldhack's done an incredible job from a facility standpoint, but I mean, it really is kind of indicative. When that started leaking Saturday, you're like, oh my goodness, what else could go wrong?
Yeah, you know, I saw the video Saturday posted circulating on social media and thought, you know, what a metaphor to the way the Syracuse football season has gone so far as losing your top 2 running backs before even playing a game, mm-hmm. to losing now Tommy DeVito and your All-American safety as well. You know, things have been certainly really challenging for this team. And, you know, Dino's, I know, trying his best to turn it around. But when you have injuries year after year, whether it's dating back to Antoine Cordy and Eric Dungy, to here they are now with several and opt-outs, things aren't going to be easy in the unforgiving ACC football. You got Clemson and Notre Dame still on the schedule, mm-hmm. and now you have this dome roof leak, which we understand is just a result of them still finishing up some work on the dome. The dome is only one part of the entire renovation. The roof, sorry, is only one part of the whole renovation, and they're gonna, you know, continue to renovate other aspects. You know, continue to improve Wi-Fi, lighting. They have the big scoreboard, so we're told they're still touching up things, and that's the cause for the leak. But I know a lot of CNY fans were scratching their head there.
All right, let's finish up on a basketball note here, Matt, because obviously practice has kind of commenced here in small groups and obviously full squad workouts. What's the expectation level for Coach Boeheim this winter?
Sure. Jim Boeheim entering his 45th season at his alma mater. You know, hard to believe for him. He usually gives it a chuckle anytime you let him know what year it's been. It's been more than 50 years since he started as an assistant back in 1969. But this is a Syracuse team that went 18-14 last season, pretty much on the bubble, probably an NIT team. Had there been a selection Sunday, maybe they squeak in with a couple more wins in the ACC tournament, losing their top scorer, all ACC first team player Elijah Hughes, who's a possible late first round draft pick coming up here in the NBA draft. Really good wing, averaged almost 20 points per game for the Cuse, rebounded, drew a lot of defensive attention his way. And now Syracuse is tasked with replacing him. Luckily, they have 5 of 6 rotation players back, really good freshman guard in Kadari Richmond. and a transfer wing in Alan Griffin, who should be able to play that Elijah Hughes role. I think everyone in the program is really high on Alan Griffin from Illinois, who shot 42% from three last season in limited time. So give him, you know, what Boeheim might give him, 30, 35 minutes, as he normally does to those type of starters, and he might be a candidate for, you know, pretty big breakout year in the ACC. And, you know, as far as predictions, you know, I think they're going to be right on the bubble again. I hate to say it for Syracuse fans, but the reality is they've been a bubble team past several years. And while they're losing Elijah Hughes, they have, I think, enough experience to at least hang in there and try to make a run at the NCAA tournament again.
All right. Matt Gutierrez covers Syracuse for The Athletic. Appreciate the time. Stay well, my man.
Thank you, Fels. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right. Matt Gutierrez joining Packer and Durham here on ACC Network. Interesting about the kind of the bleak. Doesn't sound good, does it?
Football. Well, Wes,
this doesn't sound good.
You know, that's why this week is so important, just to get a win, right? I mean, it's the perfect deodorant of just saying, hey, we got issues all over the place, but if you win a game, at least everybody's upbeat and positive. Really important for Cuse to win. And from a basketball perspective, Syracuse and bubble now just seems like it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? I mean, it just, whether you think they're going to be down, up, whatever, I mean, Cuse and the bubble are just kind of become a March tradition. And Jim Boeheim will roll it out there. He'll play that zone, and, you know, he'll cause some trouble. I'll say it again. The last time we saw Syracuse play, when they jumped on North Carolina, when everybody picked the Heels to win the ACC tournament, they beat Roy's boys. They put them in the woodshed. So you never know with Syracuse, man. You just never know. But, again, hoop season underway. Get that thing cranked up, and hopefully November 25th, waiting on the schedule and all that stuff. But from a football perspective, really a must-win this weekend for Dino.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Yesterday, Wes, I made a statement that Clemson and Georgia Tech, in my opinion, is the most underrated rivalry in college football. And so we're going to do a deep dive into this series coming up here in the next segment or two. And when you go through the history of this, like just with, for example, within the last 30 years, and I would challenge anybody, whatever teams you think could match this series, to knock yourself out. In the last 30 years, Wes, both of these teams have won a national championship. So before you bring any argument to the table, you better have both those boxes checked. So both of these teams, Georgia Tech and Clemson, have won a national championship in the last 30 years. Now, their arch rivals in their respective states have not. Just pointing that out. They have played such unbelievable games in terms of tight, crazy endings, upsets. Didn't see that coming. Matter of fact, I looked it up this morning just out of curiosity's sake. Since 1990, games determined by 4 points or less. Georgia Tech has 10 wins by 4 points or less since 1990. Clemson's got four since 1990, 4 points or less. And they both have a 5-point win against each other. There have been games in this series that I don't care what the number is beside your name, it doesn't mean anything today or tonight. I said to you yesterday, Georgia Tech has ruined more Clemson football parties than any school in America. And we're getting ready to prove that here in the next segment or two. But these two have played sensational games. It's a longstanding historic rivalry. But just within the last couple decades, they have played games in which you go, oh my goodness, maybe you see one or two of those in your lifetime. They used to do it literally every single year against each other.
Yeah, the curious part about the rivalry is that for many years, I mean, I said that, you know, it's going to be the 85th meeting on Saturday at Grant Field at noon. But for many years, the Clemson-Georgia Tech game was played in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Howard
decided
that he was going to start litigating Bobby Dodd to play that game at Clemson.
Hey, Dodd.
And Dodd wouldn't do it early.
Chicken.
Dodd wasn't going to do it. Eventually, though, and Dodd retired, they started discussions, and ultimately in 1974, they played for the first time at Clemson. And from that point on, it's basically been a rotating situation. Now, there have been a couple scheduling quirks along the way. The ACC wanted to achieve balance in their schedule, four home, four away. So Georgia Tech went to Clemson twice as a result. And Georgia Tech had a desire one time to get Clemson and Georgia in alternate years at Grant Field. Dan Radakovich can tell us this story one day, Pac, to balance their revenues on tickets.
Yep.
How about that?
Yep.
So Georgia Tech wanted to balance their ticket revenue because they had Clemson, Georgia, I think it was in the they had Clemson, Georgia in the even years, and now they're in a situation where they were going to have, obviously, Georgia now with the miss in the schedule. That's why I said back in the summer it's going to be important they get the Georgia thing worked out, right? Because that's a part of the revenue stream. Anyway, long story short, 1974 was the first year that Georgia Tech traveled to Clemson. I looked at some of the games here of recent note. 1990 was a big game. Georgia Tech won the game. They'd go on to win a share of the national title, but that ball game helped Bobby Ross's team kind of launch themselves into the national rankings. 1991, the Tigers won a 9-7 defensive struggle. It was a great Clemson team. The offenses were stymied that day. But 1990 is the game, 21-19. That pushed Georgia Tech up into the national rankings, and ultimately they would win a share of the national title. 91, the Tigers won 9-7. Then you jump to 1996. Neilon Green's sneak at the goal line in the final minute gave Clemson the win. At Frank Howard Field at Death Valley. And then in 1997, Georgia Tech bounced back, and on a block punt that was recovered by Tavares Tillman for a touchdown, that turned the ball game that night. Georgia Tech would go on to post the winning season and go to the Carquest Bowl where they beat West Virginia. So to me, those are just a handful of the games in the last 30 years that you mentioned a moment ago that I think play out and kind of set the table for the rivalry that we ultimately got once we got into the 2000s, and that's where it really got crazy.
Well, I'm going to take it to another level in the next break, because I'm going to give you a handful of the ones that come to mind, and we're going to give you some video that you're going to go, I can't remember that was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. It's unbelievable. But nevertheless, let me take a quick call here before we go to break. Bruce in South Carolina has been holding patiently. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. It's probably a good thing ESPN wasn't around in the early 70s, because this rivalry would probably be nixed. Because in 71, three rats from Georgia Tech's tunnel went out and ripped off the Tiger's tail, and then got beat up in the middle field by the cheerleaders. And the next year, they sent a letter down to Clemson and tell them they're going after the whole Tiger suit. And when they were the whole tunnel, rat tunnel from Georgia Tech, all asked for the cheerleaders, the JV football team came out to kind of clothesline them.
I wish ESPN was alive in the early 70s. That would have been great television. You kidding me?
I wish ESPN was alive to show that. Yeah.
That
would
have been best. Bruce, I appreciate the phone call. These go way back.
Thanks,
now.
Bud.
And you mentioned Dodd and Frank Howard and all that stuff. But I want to take a break, Wes, because when we come back, I'm going to give you five or six games that have happened this century that are so good. The endings are so unbelievable. And like I said, you'd get maybe one or two in your lifetime. But these two teams have gone back and forth and have ruined the other guy's party so often that it's crazy. And one of the reasons we're doing that is because this week you got Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins, year two, and they're certainly 1,000% better than they were a year ago. Talking about the Jackets. And here comes number one to Atlanta. And I'm not telling you that Georgia Tech's going to upset Clemson, but all I'm going to tell you is the next segment you're going to see multiple highlights from multiple years where a team with a single digit beside their name, feeling good with a zero in the loss column, went home with an L and on crazy finishes. But this series has been so good. The last 24 times they've played, 12 for the Jackets, 12 for the Tigers. Just saying. I think, again, since 1990, there is not a better, more underappreciated rivalry than Clemson and Georgia Tech than anywhere else in college football. I don't care what game you put up. Mm-hmm. These two have had unbelievable games.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, the most underappreciated rivalry in college football. It's Georgia Tech and it's Clemson. And Wes, I've picked out a handful here for you. And I'm going to let you were front and center for a lot of these as the voice of the Jackets. And like I said,
all of them.
Georgia all Tech them. Has ruined more Clemson parties than anybody I know of. Let's lead off with 2000. Mm-hmm. Clemson's ranked fifth in the country. Tommy Bowden's got this thing going. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there's a rebirth of Clemson football, right? 2000. Tigers are ranked fifth in the country. Yeah. Everybody pointing the finger about, oh, my God, we get Florida State next week. I can't wait. Well, you got to get past Georgia Tech first. And this was a back-and-forth classic, one of many that we're going to show you. And the Tigers take the lead late with less than 2 minutes to go. There's Rod Gardner, right? Tigers up 28-24. Life is good. Death Valley on going bonkers. And here comes George Godsey. Watch out. Coming down the stretch. Back and forth we go. How about that? 4:54 for Godsey. But this was the play right here.
This is it. This is
it.
Look
at that catch.
Kerry Watkins.
Woo.
Back line of the end zone.
Game.
Lost Louisiana's Kerry Watkins.
Match. One hand catch, 8 seconds to go. Georgia Tech, a winner. Clemson ranked fifth in the country. And if you're thinking, oh my God, what a gut-wrenching, horrific loss. Oh, it was if you're a Clemson fan. But you know what? Revenge was sweet a year later because this was a game I actually attended on our Southern Fried Football Tour. A guy by the name of Woodrow Danzler put on a show on the flats. And these two this is one of the best games I think I've ever seen in terms of going back and forth and everything going on. Clemson ends up winning this thing in overtime, 47-44. But what a day for Woody, though, huh? And that was just crazy good.
The part about the game, and people talk about the overtime and the second half, if you were at the game, Woodrow Danzler scored on like some – busted play from 50 some yards at the end of the first half. Remember that play, Pack?
Yeah.
Where he goes like 50 yards, it seems like, on the last play of the half. And at the time, George O'Leary had agreed in principle to do a walk-off halftime radio interview with our network. That didn't go so well.
No.
That was a miss. No, that was bad. Didn't go well at all, actually.
Jackets were ranked ninth in the country at home, and really Clemson kind of gave Georgia Tech a dose of their own medicine from a year before. However, we're still not done with this series. I mean, we're just getting started.
Wait. 2001 is oftentimes, we've talked this week about teams with 3 weeks off, Pack. 2001, Georgia Tech lost the Florida State game because of 9/11, then had a bye week. Then played Clemson. Georgia Tech had 3 weeks off and came back and played that game. And Clemson, to their credit, was sensational. Danzler was as good as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
All right, 3 years later, after the 0-1 Woody Danzler show, in his second collegiate game, America was introduced to Calvin Johnson. And everybody knows the last play of the game. Well, the last play of Georgia Tech, here it is, Reggie Ball. Well, this is the first touchdown. Actually, it's his second touchdown catch. There's Ty Hill defending. He played in the league. This is Calvin Johnson's second college game, by the way. Oh, no, Pack. Pack.
I mean, there's 20 seconds to go to the game. All you got to do is hike it, kick it, game's over. Game's over. But no, that happened, and then this happened. Ball game.
Clemson puts their best corner, Justin Miller, one of those five-star cats, Pack. You remember him, right?
Yeah.
They put Justin Miller on Calvin Johnson one-on-one. No help over the top.
Not good.
Your man, my man.
Not good.
second college game.
Down 10 with 2 minutes to go, no problem for the Jackets. Another gut-wrenching loss for the Tigers, right? Georgia Tech and Clemson. I'm telling you, and we're just scratching the surface now. These two have played unbelievable games. And I told you, Georgia Tech's got 10 wins over Clemson since 1990 by 4 points or less. Clemson's got 4 wins over Georgia Tech by 4 points or less. And both of them even have a 5-point win against the other guy. Series has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's been absolutely fantastic. And speaking of 5-point wins, let's go 2009 ACC championship game. Georgia Tech, Clemson. Mm-hmm. And you talking about back and forth. Literally, the last team with the ball won. That's what this was. And this dude right here, yep. What a night. C.J. Spiller only ran for 233 against the Jackets. 233.
Yeah. He was the MVP of the game.
Yep.
He was the MVP. I mean, it was amazing. Ballgame played at Raymond James, by the way, in Tampa. I mean, look at the score. Nobody stopped anybody.
No.
Until the last possession of the game. Derek Morgan got the sack of Kyle Parker at the end of the game to seal it for Georgia Tech. I mean, I'm convinced Clemson would have scored again and won the game. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, if there were 2 minutes left,
it was crazy.
Clemson, again, whoever was going to have the ball for a drive was going to win the game at the end. But both those teams, I mean, offensively, they were terrific. Spiller was unbelievable, but Georgia Tech mm-hmm. wins the championship. And again, starts the continuation of back and forth between Georgia Tech and Clemson in this series.
Tigers won the 2010 game. Now, remember, they played twice in 2009. Georgia Tech won a Thursday night game early in the year, and then they played in the rematch in Tampa. Clemson won the 2010 game. And then in 2011, the Tigers were riding high. Now, I'm going to go ahead and apologize to Taj Boyd and some of these other guys that are going to be watching this show today or hear about this show. But Roddy Jones made us run this one, folks. Roddy Jones, will be with us tomorrow, made us run this video right here. This is 2011. Saturday night, there's nothing like Grant Field on Saturday night, by the way. Tevin Washington, here's Orwin Smith. Roddy says he got the block on the game winner. He probably did. Let's see, do we get him there?
Yeah,
I see
holding.
Stephen Hill trying to block somebody. Oh, there goes Roddy. Roddy right there. Roddy threw a block. 20 threw a block for Tevin Washington. By the way, Sammy Watkins was incredible. Tevin Washington ended up being the star of the game. Sammy Watkins had a big night. And that's David Sims, who wanted to go to Clemson, but ended up signing with Georgia Tech, scoring a touchdown in the ballgame and another huge win. There was an exchange of plays. Tevin Washington threw an interception deep in Clemson in his own end of the field. Taj Boyd then on the next play threw into the end zone, and Jamia Thomas intercepted. It was a huge exchange of plays and possessions right there in the second half. Ended up being a huge part of the ballgame too.
Georgia Tech jumped out to a 24-3 lead, won the football game. But, Wes, every time I see those highlights, it kind of reminds me of programs that are trying to get back on track. Because, again, that was 2011. Mm-hmm. Clemson's ranked sixth in the country.
Yep.
And you're thinking, all right, you know, Dabo's starting to make some noise here. How good is this team? And they weren't a finished product. But, you know, they'd kind of cracked the top 10 and – Tiger Nation was feeling good about life, and all of a sudden this Dabo Swinney might have something for us, and then, you know, they get spanked by Georgia Tech. And every time I see that highlight video, I think of teams like right now, like Miami, right? Hey, are they coming back? Got a young coach, got some enthusiasm, got some hype going on. In the top 10, all of a sudden they get punched. How do they respond? And I go back and watch that tape, and you realize how far Clemson's coming. They were good at the time. But now you know who they are. You got to go through those kind of setbacks, even if you're in the top 10. Even if you think you've kind of turned the corner, yep. You're going to have nights where, you know what, we're just not quite there yet. And I think about what Mac Brown's doing at North Carolina, what Manny's doing right now at Miami, what Justin Fuente wants to get the Hokies back to. You're going to have those nights where, you know what, we're good. We're not there yet. So maybe just a reminder when you see that highlight tape, even if you're a Clemson fan and you see that and you go, man, I can't believe they're showing that 2011. Well, you know what? You appreciate where you are now because it took nights like that where you said, you know what? we're making inroads, but we're not quite there. And, you know, I don't need to show you 70 points by West Virginia in the Orange Bowl. There's always those moments you look back at a program and say, you know what? Might have been one of the best things that happened to us was taking that loss because we learned we have to be better in whatever it might be, offensive line, defensive line, kicking game, whatever the case may be. But this series, like I said, I would ask anybody who loves college football, give me another series. And I'm not talking about Ohio State, Michigan, Auburn, Alabama. No, those are great. I'm talking about underrated, underappreciated series. There is not a better one in the country than Georgia Tech and Clemson. Again, both teams have won national titles. They've played close games. You've seen upsets. You've seen incredible plays, ridiculous finishes, individual performances. You just went, wow. You kidding me? This series has produced the unexpected. So with that said, that'll lead you into this weekend when Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins, again, putting together a program, having to face the number one team in the country, and Dabo's guys. So, again, prepare yourself. These have been crazy, crazy games.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.